Napa know-how.
When you purchase a set of Napa brake pads and rotors, you get a discount code from Fanatics.com worth up to $50 towards your favorite sports gear. While Napa can't help your team reach the promised land, we can help make sure your car will, because these brakes come with something no sports team does: guaranteed performance. Great brakes, great price, great fan gear. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Offer expires September 30th, 2017.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. My name is Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa, your host for the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Today, we're bringing in Justin Bradford, author of the book Making of Smashville. He's also the writer and host of Penalty Box Radio. We're going to talk a little Predators hockey. We're going to go around the league and break the ice on news and notes in the show, and then headed down the Vegas lane. There's lots to talk about with Subban getting activated. Our young Dylan Ferguson reassigned to Kamloops. What an experience for him, and we'll get into all of that in just a minute's time. Stay tuned. All right, hockey fans, let's kick this show off with a bang and bring in my co-host, Chris Lisa. Chris, good day to you, sir. How are things out on Long Island?
A little rainy weekend, but we're doing well. And so why don't we just jump right into it? We got our opening face-off breaking the ice here. We're going to talk a little how crazy the Metro Division is, and then talk a little Winnipeg Jets. The Devils are in the three-way tie for first place with Columbus and Pittsburgh at 25 points. Although Columbus and Pittsburgh, especially Pittsburgh, has played two, three more games than everyone than a few other teams in the division. But you had New Jersey in first with 25 points, and then you had Carolina in last with 17 points. So to say it's tight, as you know, Mark, I write for Eyes on Isles. .com about the Islanders, and someone had a good article the other day on the site and said this Metro division, and basically the title of the article is the Metro is going to be a dogfight this year. And we're really seeing that right now. I mean, three teams at 25, the Isles are at 22, Caps 21, Rangers at 20, Phillies at 19, Carolina's at 17. Some teams have played a couple of games less, so it's really even tighter than those numbers suggest. So it's going to be obviously the big surprise is the Devils. And next week we're going to have a first-time special guest, someone who I've been meaning to have on the show probably for the last couple of years, but it was never the right time to talk Devil hockey. Well, now it is, and that's Chris Wassel. He's a man who has many hats. I think he has more jobs than Russ Cohen, one of which writes for Russ Cohen at Sportsology. So we're going to talk about the Devils in there, but this is going to be some kind of division, and every point is precious, to say the least. Like I said, the Isles are off to a good start. Knock on wood. We've got a big game tonight in Tampa. I'll be very interested in that. How about possible? I know Clayton Keller is the favorite, but how about Matt Barzal, who I've been telling you about the last 2 years, 17 points in 18 games, sir. That's not too shabby. And, the Caps, you're seeing them take the hits that they have in terms of the depth of their roster. They're doing okay, but they're not the team they once were. The Rangers have been up and down. They were down a bad first 12 games, won six in a row, and now have dropped two in a row. You know, Carolina and Philly, kind of around NHL 500. So, it's Pittsburgh has had, some ugly losses as well. So, like I said, they are at 25 points. Although they've played the most games in the division, they've played 21 games. So,
right. And Carolina has three games in hand over most of the division, and they're sitting right there with 18 points. So,
right. The Islanders and Carolina have played the least. Yeah, both of those teams have played 18 games. And then you got, and the Devils.
Carolina, point that Carolina out. Devils, was 17.
Yep. And the Devils
and
played 18
Jersey,
games
New
well.
New Jersey
so.
And Islanders tied with 18. So.
Yeah. So, like I said, this is going to be, and to be honest with you, if the Devils are going to be a decent team. Okay, forget about, you know, vying for first place, but a, you know, much better than we expected. This is going to be a very, very competitive division. The NHL today, as we all know, is about parity, and this division exemplifies it the most out of any.
Well, Nashville, who we're going to be talking about a little bit later with Justin Bradford when he joins the show, he just went through the Metro Division, wins against Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Washington in the last week. Looking at it now.
They had a rough one the other night, though.
Pretty handily, coming off a five-game winning streak. Losing to Minnesota in ugly fashion, like you said, Thursday night, but that's after a five-game winning streak, starting with back-to-back wins, Anaheim and the Kings on the third and fourth, and then
that was a big win for Minnesota.
Yeah, they needed a shot in the arm. They needed a shot in the arm, but
they were down
with Nashville wiping up the division in the last week, if you will, the preseason favorites in the division. We'll have a lot to talk about with Justin Bradford the farther into the show that we get. But no, I agree with you, Chris. I think that division is going to be, right now, who do you count out of the playoffs from that division? I'm not ready to write anybody off yet.
Yeah, and injuries are going to be a big, you know, losing the team or two or three that loses a key guy, you know, for a month or, you know, that very well could be the difference. You know, all the teams,
sure,
in my opinion, in this division are at least solid, if not better, you know, depending upon who you talk to. All have really good pros. All have a con or two. So some are in better position than others. Like I said, like the Rangers, for instance, they've played an awful lot of home games. Okay, they've...
Sure.
They have a 500 record, but they, of their 20 games, they've played 13 at home. Whereas, you know, a team like the Islanders or the Hurricanes or you know, they've played quite a more number of road games. And, you know, the Islanders, I can tell you, they've played 10 games on the road, and they've played some hellacious road games. I mean, they already got the California trip out of the way. They've gone to St. Louis, they've gone to Minnesota, they've gone to Nashville. So they've they're very happy with their start other than a couple of games here or there. So it's going to be an interesting division, to say the least. And I guess we should point out, too, to before moving on to Winnipeg, is, you know, Columbus made some news this week, a really good move for signing Cam Atkinson. 7-year deal for just under $6 million a year. A little surprised. He definitely took a bit of a discount, in my opinion.
Atkinson
is, I know he's not a center, okay, so that hurts your price a little bit. But this is a guy coming off back-to-back 60-plus point years. We've seen the recent market of guys getting 60 points, like Ryan Johansson, getting $8 million, a little over $8 million a year. So he signs for basically $6 million a year. Plus, you know, you would think, like, all right, he's going to take less money, but he'll get that eighth year from Columbus that other teams can't offer him. No, he signed for $7 million. So now I don't know his numbers off the top of my head for this year. I don't know if he's off the same pace as last year. I don't think he is, but still, that was a good pickup, a good signing for Columbus, who supposedly is still very much in the market for help at center. So, anyway.
Right. Another minor trade this week. The Kings and Edmonton threw a pair of forwards at each other, with Juuse Jokinen going to Los Angeles, basically from Edmonton's press box. He hadn't been getting into too many games at all. And then the Kings sending Michael Camilleri, up to Edmonton in that deal, which Camilleri started his career with the Kings, and then he bounced around a little bit. And I don't know if he was fitting in as well this time around. And with the rookies I follow and Kempe respectively, picking up a little bit of the scoring for Los Angeles. That made Camilleri expendable, and they decided to bring in a little bit more two-way oriented forward in UC Okunin, which I like that move for the Kings. And if he can get if Camilleri can get up in there and give a boost maybe to Edmonton's third line, then it might work out good for Edmonton as well. But UC Okunin seems like might be a real good fit in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think Jokinen is a good fit to play that third line game. He seems like a really good LA King, both on 1 year deals. Mike Camilleri has had a really nice career, to say the least. He's had some big years in this league. It just looks like it's over, to be quite honest. Edmonton gained a little bit of a cap space, I believe. Obviously, secondary scoring has been one of many issues up there. So, they're trying to find they're hoping to find lightning in a bottle. You know, even if it's not forget about for the whole season, even if Camilleri helps them for 3 months of the season, kind of thing. So, we'll have to see what happens. But let's go to real quick before we go to the Vegas lane. Talk about the Winnipeg Jets. I'm going to touch upon them along with the Blues with Justin, but I mean, me and Matt Pryor in the Central Division preview show that we did, both were saying like this was our sleeper team. 11-4-3, 25 points. You got two guys in Wheeler and Scheifele, 22 points respectively. Yeah. You know, Laine and Ehlers they're playing good, but they've yet to take off, if you will. Kulikov has been really solid for them, +7. And, watch out. They have three really talented kids, and Kyle Connor, Joe Amari, and Josh Morrissey. All of them are contributing, which is all they need out of them for this year. But they're getting more experience, more confidence. And then Connor Hollebuck, who's been, a top kid, top prospect. They've been waiting for him to kind of break through. They signed Steve Mason to give them some protection. Well, Connor Hollebuck, I know we're only at the quarter pole, but if they were going to have a Vezina Trophy vote, he would be in the running because 10-1-2, 2.29 goals against, .930 save percentage. The Jets are in second place, only 4 points behind the Blues who are in first. But again, and I know it's early, but they do have two games in hand on the Blues. So they're right there with St. Louis. They're slightly ahead of Nashville. This is a really talented team, as we talked about. And you got to feel this kind of start to give them this kind of confidence. And after Nashville, with the rest of the division basically hanging around .500, the Blues, if they can have if their second quarter of the season can go as well as the first quarter, this is a team that looks like it's going to really cement themselves as, locking in one of those top three slots in the Central Division.
I agree. Interesting you bring up St. Louis and Winnipeg. Both teams have a loss to the Vegas Golden Knights. Isn't that funny?
Two good wins.
Both games at home. So, you guys were both for sure. You and Matt both were calling on Winnipeg to step it up this year, and expected them to do so. And I was more of the wait and see, show me, don't tell me kind of a deal on. Doing something real quick here. All right, we're good. I was more of the wait and see because they had gone over a little bit of roster turnover from the last couple of years, and they were going to be counting heavily on some of the younger players they were bringing up. But as you say, so far so good with the youngsters. You know what you're going to get out of Patrick Laine, but like you said, some of the other guys coming up. I wanted to slow my roll a little bit on Winnipeg, but like you said, at the quarter pole, they're right there. And it's kind of been a division overall that's we almost said this about the Pacific too, that the bottom, I don't want to say bottom feeders, but the the teams that have been on the lower end of this division the last couple of years, we expected them to have a better season this year, and we were really questioning some of the perennials, me, Minnesota, you and Matt, more so Chicago, whether they were going to be able to maintain their recent level of excellence. And so far earlier in the season, I got to give the nod to you and Matt on that one.
So far, like I said,
pretty much upside down, like you guys said.
Yeah, I mean, for the both of, if you're a Blues or Jets fan going in, it's not like you expected to be contending for a playoff spot, but you were like worried about certain things, if certain things would come together. So to get off to this kind of start, and, you know, not only that, but, you know, I mean, Nashville, no surprise, they're also a good start. But the rest of the teams in the division trying to, and Colorado's off to a tremendous start, even though I think they're a game or two over 500, but for them, that's a tremendous start. So they're putting themselves in, you know, really good position, to say the least. So let's go down the Vegas lane. The Knights had two games this week, both on the road, had a rough go of it in Edmonton. It happens. Dylan Ferguson saw some action in that game towards the end of that game. Good for him. And Vancouver had a real nice comeback win. So we talked about, you know, kind of getting through this tough period. You know, again, this capped a 9-game stretch where 8 of them are on the road. Obviously, during most of that stretch, in fact, I think during almost all of that stretch, other than the first period and a half of the first game, they were on their fourth goalie. So, you know, they have a really good record. You know, good news is Malcolm Subban was activated last night, I believe. So I would imagine you'll see him in the Nets tomorrow night. Legacy goes back to being the backup. Bill Ferguson goes back to junior hockey. So that's a good position for the team as well. Lucas Bisa was placed on injured reserve, but they have some depth on defense. So, the Knights, you know, got through a tough period there. They got one of the goalies back. It sounds like I can't find anything on Oscar Dang. I think he's going to be out a little while. And Fleury, I'm sure. I haven't really seen anything with a timetable. They're going to be very careful with him, and rightfully so. So, especially if Subban, not that they would rush him anyway, but if he could pick up where he left off, that would be real fine. And this is a big week for the Knights coming up. They're one of the few teams that don't play tonight, but the next 7 days they got 4 games. So they had kind of a light week last week. They only had 2 games. This week they have 4. They're home to your LA Kings, sir, tomorrow night, and then they go to Anaheim, and then they come back home for the Sharks, and then they go to Arizona. So let's see
four divisional games.
So let's see if they can pick up
on the back of 2 divisional games. So it's really 6 division games in a row, sir. 4 of which, of course, are on the road.
Yeah, so if they can win, I mean, I always look at a block of games like this, potential 8 points. If you can get 6 points, you got to be thrilled.
Yeah, for sure. I actually look for them to build on Vancouver. I thought Vancouver was a real good win. You know, the Edmonton Vancouver isn't the easiest trip to make, especially travel wise. So especially coming off the trouncing at the hands of the Edmonton Oilers on Tuesday night, to make that trip and then get to Vancouver and really dominate play start to finish in the Vancouver game. I think the Vancouver game was pretty important.
They've been a nice surprise too, Vancouver.
That's why I think there was a lot of riding on that game. Had Vancouver won, they would have jumped Vegas in the standings. And, you know, it would have been another road loss, which, you know, the road thing's a little overblown with this team because the road started poorly in New York and lost a tough one in Boston, you know, but you know, if you look at their road wins, they do have a road win against Dallas, who's just a game out of the playoffs, basically. Ottawa is currently tied for a playoff spot. Overtime loss in Toronto, I think that's a good overtime loss considering they were down 3-1 early in that game and battled
sure.
back. So, I mean, you look at them, they're 4-5, I think, on the road. And we talked about this last week where if you get 50% of your road points and then, you know, take care of 60-70% of your home games, you're a playoff team. So they go on
yep.
into Edmonton and they lay an egg, let's face it. Then to back that up and maintain your standings position with a dominant performance in Vancouver, I thought that was a big confidence boost for that team. Not only just winning, but beating a playoff team, winning on the road, and doing it in deciding fashion. I think that sets them up for, you know, the coming week, as you said, four games, all division. You know, they've played six division games in the last, counting Edmonton. It'll be in the last, let's say, 10 days to run through your division in six divisional teams in 10, 11 days. That's a tough run, especially with four on the road. So, you know, that 20 game mark, we're getting real close to it, Chris. And that was the point in the season where you were saying, let's see where
yeah.
they are at that point. Well, if you were to grade the Golden Knights, after everything they've gone through with their goalies to maintain discipline and maintain roster position, standing position, after going through the Shipachyov deal, which I've touched on in the past, and hashtag Shippy Who, and just, you know, nose to the grindstone every night. You know, you're going to have a stinker. Every team's going to have stinkers every year, and they got their first one out of the way in Edmonton, but I don't see much not to like in this Vegas Knights team.
No, and I, like I said, the next three games are going to be interesting to me. I mean, as you know, Mark, the Kings got off to a tremendous start, come back to the earth a little bit. I think they've lost three in a row or four in a row. I'm not sure.
Coming off
four-game
losing streak.
All been close games, by the way. I think they've all basically been one-goal games, which shows you the difference between winning and this losing this league. It's so small. The Kings are playing this afternoon, so they'll get the Kings on a back-to-back situation. But they're going to get a hungry Kings team. You know, then they go to Anaheim, who is right around 500. They've had a ton of injuries. I mean, them in Minnesota have gotten creamed with injuries. So they're trying to get their heads above, you know, trying to take that next step to go from, you know, survival mode with all these injuries to kind of positioning themselves a little bit more comfortable. And then by the time everyone comes back, really kind of make that run. And then the Sharks, you know, the Sharks are a good veteran team. They have strong goaltending. They have strong defense. They don't have a lot of, I mean, they really rely upon, you know, like four guys to score. That's the problem over there, but you know, not an easy team as well. So, If they can take two out of those three and then go take care of business in Arizona, although Arizona had a nice win. Depends how you look at it. Arizona had a nice win in Montreal the other night, or you might want to say Montreal had a bad loss. But I'm kind of rooting for Arizona.
Either way.
I'm not saying again. Yeah, I'm not rooting them against the Knights. But what I'm saying is their record is like 3-15-3. I mean, that's just, I'd like to see this team put a lot together, a little bit of a streak, give some of those kids some confidence and kind of moving forward kind of thing. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting week for the Knights. William Carlson, you know, maybe having the bigger role on Vegas versus a very complimentary role. I always liked him. He was a guy that looked like was going to be a real nice player for a team, you know, that kind of third-line defensive center, chipping a little offense. Well, he's doing a lot more than chipping in offense. He's had, looks like a real nice play. Yeah, he looks like a real. I really like the players they picked up in the draft. You know, to me, the big story over the next 2 months is going to be where is this team going to be at in the standings at that time, and given, you know, are they going to be healthy, in a good position health wise, and what does that mean in terms of all these free agents, in terms of, you know, do they look to sign any of them now? Do they look to, I'm sure the plan was the trade, probably a majority of them. I've been reading that a number of teams have already kind of checked in with McPhee, especially about Neil and Perron. Just probably putting out feelers at this point. You know, you never know what talks could lead. I don't expect a trade like that to happen for them now. But that's going to be, you know, that could wind up being a very interesting call, you know, come February.
Yeah, and just to go back to the Kings for a little bit, I'm looking today's the last game of a 5-game homestand, and they've lost the previous 4. That's not a good look for this. And they weren't really all close games. Tampa Bay spanked them 5-2. The Sharks 2-1. They blew 2-0 lead against Vancouver, lose that game in the last minute 3-2. Boston gets them 2-1, so that's a close game, but really
3-1 goal game.
Yeah, and then the 5-2 whooping at the hands of
right,
Tampa
the Tampa game. And that was a deceptive 5-2 because it wasn't it like 4-0?
It was
5-1
or 4-0 it was a whooping. If they lose tonight, that's a 5-game. That's 10 points that the Kings have just, you know, bye bye. You won't get those 10 points.
They want to end it. This is a big game.
Yeah, and then they kind of have the same. They kind of have the same schedule going forward. You know, roadie in Vegas, home to Winnipeg, roadie in Arizona, home to Anaheim, and that's kind of where, you know, Vegas is going the next week, home away, home away, home away. In fact, the Vegas doesn't play more than 2 home games in a row until, I think, starting their next home stand is December 13th. So, interesting. And then, like you were talking about earlier with the Rangers and the Islanders' heavy home and away schedule, I was looking through Ottawa, and they've got 14 home games so far. And five
is that right?
Games. Yeah, that was the discrepancy I could find just quickly looking through the schedule earlier today, getting ready for the show and trying to compare, you know, wins and losses with Vegas for the segment here in the Vegas lane. So, yeah, to look at Ottawa and another team that Vegas has a win against on the road, by the way, but yeah, they're home game heavier than I think you said the Rangers had 13 or 14 at home so far. So I find it hard to believe anybody else has that big of a discrepancy as those two teams right now.
Like I said, and also it's where you play, you know, your road games as well. Like I said, you know, not all road games are equal. You gotta be thrilled where Vegas is at. They're getting Subban back tonight. Not that look, Subban. I think he played in what?
I'm not sold. I gotta admit, he played here. He looked pretty good, but remember, he's a Boston Bruins.
Oh yeah.
I mean, cast off.
No, exactly. I don't want to make it sound like Fleury is coming back because
Dominic Hasek's not showing up to play in a Malcolm Subban jersey. I mean, let's be honest here.
But it is definitely, and with all due respect to Mr. Legace, I think it's definitely an upgrade. So, and again, in these kind of tight games, you know, every bit helps. So, no, absolutely. So, if you're, you know, people in Vegas have to be thrilled of where the team is at, and it's going to be an interesting next couple of months, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, one thing I will say, when you get Dansk and Legacy back in the minor league splitting time, you give that tandem, let's say, 2 to 3 years of AHL seasoning, maybe a year or two for Dansk, who I think out of the two, maybe even including Subban, I think you could realistically see a couple of years down the road with Fleury gone and maybe Subban getting dealt for a piece when Danske and Legacy already. That's, you know, to come in under the pressure of starting a franchise and perform the way both those two goalies have. I think McPhee and staff has done a pretty good job stocking the cupboard at the goaltender position, at least for the
another way to look at
future.
It is they could wind up trading one of them, and depending upon what happens to Lafleury, they could always, you know, at that point, if he's happy here and he's healthy, re-signing Fleury. So it definitely gives them a lot of options.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let me go ahead and bring in Mr. Justin Bradford, the author of The Making of Smashville. He's kind enough to join us on this Saturday morning or early afternoon, wherever you may be. Justin, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We appreciate you coming back. Always our go-to guy when we want to talk a little Predators hockey. And today, after a kind of up and down start to the season where they win a couple, lose a couple, win one, lose one kind of a deal, getting out of the gate. And maybe that's the Stanley Cup hangover. Maybe Neil Dean and some of the new pieces taking a little while to gel. We were talking a little bit about the Metro Division earlier in the season, and they just cleaned up on the perennial powerhouses going through the Metro Division, and currently, you know, just off of a five-game winning streak to get right back into that number three spot there. What clicked as the calendar changed to November and brought Nashville onto that five-game winning streak to get back into it?
I think a lot of it is a little bit of health, a little bit of guys getting used to finally playing with each other, guys coming back. Nick Bonino kept coming back for the first time since middle of October. Then obviously the trade, Kyle Turris coming in, has some more center depth there as well, which puts guys more in the perfect spot where they're supposed to be playing in terms of their lines and their line mates. And I think a lot of it was Pecorine playing very, very good hockey too as a goaltender. And a lot of things just gelling. They're finally settling in to the defensive pairs that they want to go with while they're waiting for Ryan Ellis to get healthy. So a lot of that as well is just figuring out in the month of October, Coach Laviolette was trying all different kinds of things in terms of the defensive pairings and what he could do, because now it's stacked in a weird way in terms of right and left and who has good chemistry with the others, who's going to play in certain special teams. They finally settled in now to that rhythm, especially after that trade of pushing Sam Girard over to Colorado. Now they have an idea of who they're going to go with, and with Yannick Weber on the IR as well. They figured that out and have a lot more chemistry, and they're gelling a little bit better offensively. There's still a lot of things they need to work on. Even with that five-game streak, they blew a lot of leads in that five-game winning streak and were able to muster out wins. So now, as a lot of people saw against Minnesota, they had a tremendous lead and blew that lead in the third period. So it's about learning how to hold on to a lead, not giving it up. And you don't – yeah, a win's great, but you still don't want to blow a lead to give another team hope. You want to get an opportunity to close a team out where you just shut them down the last 10 minutes of a third period and you're right on to victory.
Hey, Justin, it's Chris here. And again – this is Justin Bradford joining the Vegas Hockey Podcast, a great book, author of Making of Smashville. Again, you can find Justin as he both hosts and writes for Penalty Box Radio. You can find him on Twitter at Justin B. Bradford, B-R-A-D-F-O-R-D. I'd like to get your take on the Kyle Turris trade. Obviously, you know, the Preds dealt from strength here in terms of seems like they have a pretty good system. They gave up two really good kids in the deal and a second-round pick this year, which is, by many accounts, supposed to be a pretty darn good draft. But again, they have a good amount of young players, and then signing Turris to the extension. What was your take on that deal from a Predators perspective?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. This trade broke while I was watching Thor. So I get out of the movie to see everything going nuts in the hockey world of David Poile, part of another big trade. Go figure.
Right.
It's one of those things where the Predators, I think is one of those things as well, where each team got what they wanted. And that's one of those opportunities where David Poile, now he's been a part of a lot of those trades where the teams on both ends are getting what they wanted. And while one fan base may see as they're screwing over another one in terms of what they're getting back, I think the teams got what they want. Colorado got a stout young defenseman, another potential prospect, a center, and draft picks from the Predators. And then Ottawa, they receive a center when they realize that, hey, Kyle Turris is probably not going to re-sign here long-term. We can trade him away. So they get something in return, Matt Duchene. And then the National Predators wanting that true second-line center, because Nick Bonino, while he can play second-line center, he really isn't a second-line center. And that matter, he's more of a middle six guy, wherever you want to put him. So I think right there, Nashville gets what they want, because now with the way they've been able to draft some of these good players that are tradable, now they are getting the assets they want, because they've never been horrible enough to pick so high multiple years in a row. So now both of their top two centers are overall third and fourth pick guys. And so that's pretty impressive there when you see that, hey, David Poole maybe not have been able to draft it to draft high up because the team hasn't been horrible, but he's been able to draft the right assets to make them pleasing to the other side. So I think in terms of what they've been able to do with the center depth now, and they have it for so many more years, like Ron Johansson, long-term contract, Kyle Turris, long-term contract, Nick Bonino for 4 years, including this season, that's going to go a very long way to the Nashville Predators having good center depth, which we all know that's very important to win a championship. Penguins have had that. When the Chicago Blackhawks have been successful, they've done that. The LA Kings, you have to have good center depth to start. And so the Predators now have that with Kyle Turris. He's not a sexy name, per se, especially to folks in the West. So they're not used to hearing his name. But he's just as good as Matt Duchene in terms of what the Predators needed out of their center depth. So I really do like the trade. Granted, I hate seeing Sam Girard go away because I'm really high on him. He's obviously going to be a stellar defenseman. He's going to represent his country in multiple ways in the near future, too. So he's a great defenseman. He's flashy. He fits into the NHL's style of play now as a defenseman with speed and having good puck control, but you have to give up to get. And for Nashville, David Poole obviously wants to win now. He wants his team to be competitive for the next 3 to 4 years to hopefully put more cups in the Predators' hands.
You know, you mentioned before, Justin, about, you know, dealing with some injuries, but from afar, it seems like if there's two things that, you know, it's been a struggle for Nashville this year. You know, one is, you know, Ryan Johansson hasn't exactly been lighting up the score sheet. He, believe it or not, I was surprised to learn this. He scored his first goal the other night in 18 games. Does have a number of assists, but only had one goal in the season, and obviously coming off signing a very big extension. And then the other little bit of a problem area has been the play of the backup goalie. Maybe you can address those two things. And are the Preds, you know, looking to pounce on a trade to improve that backup goalie situation?
First, with Ryan Johansson, he hasn't been as stellar offensively as many folks would like to see him, only having one goal and 10 assists. But overall, what I think that trade especially has done is taken the pressure off of Ryan Johansson. What we've seen from the Predators so far this season, when they are being successful offensively, they're getting a lot of good depth scoring. And that's things that they haven't necessarily had in the past, was great depth scoring. We're naming guys off that are in the bottom six that are usually going to be named in terms of scoring goals. Guys like Mika Salamaki, he's finally coming into his own, and he's riding a point streak as well. So that's the names you want to hear. So Johansson in the first line of Forsberg and Arvidsson don't have that pressure to always put up the goals. Now adding Kyle Turris to that mix, it's been the hot line of Kyle Turris, Kevin Fiala, and Craig Smith. So it's okay for Johansson not to be there yet. Philip Forsberg started off extremely slow the past two seasons. He's starting off hot right now. Johansson, the points will come. The other thing with Johansson is he's also winning faceoffs at 56, just over 56.5% right now, and that is actually the best of his career up to this point. I know it's a small sample size for the early part of the season, but he's doing his job as a center in terms of winning those faceoffs and getting the team possession. So this is little things that he's doing well. Do people want to see him do more? Do I want to see him do more? Absolutely. But his main job is to make those around him better, and obviously with Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson, they're the top 2 point getters for the Preds right now. He's doing his job to help make them better. In terms of the backup goalie situation, Yusuf Saros, he's extremely young, and he was recently just sent down to Milwaukee in Anders Lindback, who's been very good in the AHL, who's a former Predators prospect, has been doing very well in Milwaukee. So they switched those guys out. They're getting Saros playing time. The whole thing with Yusuf Saros is he needs to be playing. He's a young prospect. He still has a bright future ahead of him, but he can't be successful when he's only playing once every 2.5 to 3 weeks. And that's the big issue with a young kid like that, is you want him playing consistently. And so I've been calling for this for the past couple of weeks, that he needs to be playing in Milwaukee, and you pull him back up because he doesn't have to go through waivers. You can send him up and down as much as you need to at this point. So give him the playing time in Milwaukee, call him up for a spot start in the NHL, send him back down. He's used to that. He's done that before, and he's just been successful that way. Instead of having him ride the pine in Nashville, even though he's traveling with the team, getting that experience of practicing with the NHL club, he needs more and more playing experience. So I think what they're doing now is realizing that, seeing that, hey, get him some good starts in Milwaukee, call him back up with the team a little bit, send him back down. You can do that. Lindback, he's one of those guys who's a capable backup. That's all you want him to be right now, to come in if he needs to relieve Rene, or maybe get a start if Rene's just feeling ill or something of that sort. So I think it's totally okay. There's no need to worry about a backup goaltender situation for the Predators. They're doing just fine. Just Saros needs to get more playing time.
Well, I think that move puts both those players where they belong for right now. And I really like seeing them do that, because it's like when you have a highly touted, offensively skilled forward who the only room on the roster for him to come up and fill in is on the fourth line. Well, that's not conducive to confidence or success, or it doesn't grow the player to be playing 8 minutes a night on a fourth line, and it doesn't grow the backup goalie in Nashville to be watching Pekka Rinne play night in, night out. So to put him back in the A and let him, continue to log minutes, see pucks, see rubber, work on his game. And, we know Anders Lindback, we know what he can do. We know he's capable backup. And I think reasons that Nashville was able to make a deep run into the playoffs last year is because Pekka Rinne was fresh going into the postseason, and it's to have the coach's confidence in a backup goalie to go ahead and put him in a start in a back-to-back instead of wondering, if you can trust the backup goalie. I think that really, actually solidifies what they want to do with the goalie position in Nashville. I did want to get back to the Turris trade just for a second and get your take. I've been thinking more and more about it, and we talked about it last week on the show right after it happened. I hope you enjoyed Thor, by the way. No spoilers, but I haven't seen it yet. My daughter went and saw it. She said it was fantastic. So I hope you had a good time with that. But back to and we're calling it the tourist deal. It's the whole thing was the Matt Duchene deal, right? But I think if we snapshot 3 years down the road, let's say Duchene doesn't like it in Ottawa. He's not willing to take a haircut on his salary to sign in Ottawa after next season. So on, you get the three picks and four picks and three prospects in Colorado. Maybe one or two of them flame out. Maybe one or two of them end up to be second, third line hybrid kind of players. And, Sam Girard ends up being a real nice piece as a middle pair defenseman. To have Turris locked up, I think one of the biggest things in that deal we didn't touch on earlier was that Turris did sign the 6-year, $6 million extension when he got to Nashville, and that locks in that second line player behind Ryan Johansson as your first line center for the next foreseeable future, as long as this core group of guys is probably going to be together. I don't think it's a stretch to once again say Poile set himself up to be the long-term winner of this whole three-way fiasco ordeal that finally ended the Matt Duchene saga in Colorado. I'd just like to get your take on how important signing Kyle Turris that extension is to the long-term, did we win this trade aspect of the conversation was to Nashville.
Yeah, that was the deal of it. I think if everybody remembers, we started hearing the inklings of the rumor that this three-team trade was going to go down on the Friday before the Sunday that it happened, or maybe even the Thursday. And the whole reason it took a few days for it to come to fruition was basically because Ottawa and Colorado were waiting on Nashville to get the deal done with Turris. So had Turris not agreed to sign an extension with Nashville, the whole trade would not have happened. So it was all based on him signing in Nashville long-term to that 6-year deal. So that's That's the big thing right there, is they had to wait for that to develop and to happen, or else it was just going to flunk out again, like what happened earlier in the summer with all the different Matt Duchene rumors, because David Boyle had pretty heavy rumors that he offered at least three times to Joe Sakic for Matt Duchene, even though at the time, Boyle even mentioned that he was interested in Kyle Turris. Just the dominoes weren't falling right for there to be a trade just between Nashville and Ottawa. That's why it had to be that three-team thing for it to happen, where everybody kind of gets a piece. But that's where that six-year deal, where Kyle Turris even said it really wasn't on the table for Ottawa, worked out for the Predators to get that, because that's what made the deal happen, was them waiting on him. And he and his wife even mentioned it in his phone conference, that they chose Nashville. Basically, he was being treated like a free agent, because he wouldn't have signed that extension if he didn't want to. So the cliche things that he was saying in his phone conference were legit true things, because he said he and his wife were looking at what the schools were like in Nashville, what the living was like in Nashville. They wanted to be here. So he chose Nashville as a quote-unquote free agent, even though he was signing an extension for that trade to happen. So that's a good thing in terms for Nashville fans to know, that he chose for that trade to happen to Nashville and not another team. So I think that goes a long, long way for him signing that contract, for them to have that center depth, because, like you said, overall, it does give Nashville lots of viability now for the foreseeable future down the center, because they don't have to worry about trying to draft that. They have that there with them right now, and that's what you need to be successful. The Predators, as we've all seen, they can pick defensemen off trees all the time. When you're able to trade Shea Weber, Seth Jones, and now Sam Girard, and you still have one of the best defensive cores in the league, you're pretty good at drafting defensemen. So I think they're pretty confident in what they have for right now and for the core they have for the future.
And their number one prospect is defenseman, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely, Dante, with Dante Fabbro in college, though. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. The more I thought about it this week, Chris, and we talked last week a little about it, and I hadn't really looked into it too much. I was leaning this way at the start, but I think potentially that and we talked also obviously with Johansson and Fisher, taking injuries in the playoffs, they were still able to get past Anaheim, but then you take Pittsburgh deep, in cycling, they use the phrase deep is the cyclist willing to go, meaning how far into the reserve of energy is somebody willing to spend to finish a climb or what have you. And then, they made Pittsburgh go pretty deep into that well without their number one and number two centers. So I think, Poyle saw that. Poyle knew how good this team can be with the defense that he's built. And one more piece, we locked that up. We got to be contenders in the West for, years and years to come with the young group on D and the forward core. That Laviolette has that play style system of hockey, where I said in our preseason, preview show, that they're going to muddle along third, fourth, with the St. Louis's, and I thought Chicago would be a little better than they are, racking up the season offensive wins or what have you. But, much like the Kings come playoff time, they're going to be a favorite. They do squeak in as a seventh seed in the West or what have you. Once the second season starts, you have to look at Nashville now as being, if not the favorite, one of the two or three teams to look at and go, yeah, they could absolutely make it to the Cup Final again.
Yeah, absolutely. With the way that Nashville's built, and the big thing right now is you can tell they're trying to make sure that it's going to be an easy changeover once Pekka-Rinne is done in Nashville with Yusuf Saros, and that's why they're getting that playing time, because they've built this team now to be competitive for 4, 5, 6 years from now, as long as health is there. But Pekka-Rinne's contract's only for the next couple of years, so they want to have an easy transition and goals. They can remain competitive, at least up front. And you have to have strong goaltending, especially in the playoffs. It was the reason why they made it to the final was because of Pekka-Rinne. That's what really drove them there, because there were so many games where they're getting out shots a few times and he was making stellar saves. He's the one that, even though he faltered in Pittsburgh and only in Pittsburgh, he's the one that got them that far. But you have to be solid in net. And so that's what they've really done, is built them to where now the Predators, they're they're the vision of the new type of NHL where you have mobile defensemen, you're strong at center, but you don't have to have big guys. You have guys that have good, strong shots from the point as well, because now the Predators obviously know it's not really the Chicago's they have to compete with for the most part now. It's the Edmonton, the future, with Connor McDavid and Draisaitl and those types of teams where they have speedy guys that you really have to defend against. That's who they're competing against for the foreseeable future. Whereas Chicago, you can already see is starting to falter a little bit, and they haven't had the best start to the season. Their reign is coming to an end, even though they're always going to be dangerous with the pieces that they have.
Their reign is starting to come to an end,
and now you see the new NHL.
Careful with that. That's where I've counted them out 3 or 4 years in a row, saying the reign is coming to an end. That's heady words, sir. Heady words. Let's hold off on.
The sweep in the first round will do that.
Yeah, I hear you. Let me throw it over to Chris. He's got one or two more for you, and then we're going to have to let you go, sir. Thank you again, Justin Bradford, right, for coming on to the Vegas Hockey Podcast and spending some of your Saturday with us. And let me let you close things out here with Chris. Chris?
Yeah, I got two quick hits for you, Justin. First one, if I said to you, Justin, which central team out of Dallas, Minnesota, and Chicago would you be most concerned for in terms of making the playoffs? In your opinion, which one is it and why?
At this point, I would say it's Minnesota, just because they seem to be the quietly steady hand. Oftentimes, they just can't put it together necessarily, and they're due to put it together. As my words were marked in the last question with Chicago, I don't think as many people will fear them as much, even though they're dangerous, but they kind of have their MO in terms of how to stop them. Dallas is one of those teams where just seems to be, they're really good on paper, but they still, even with Hitchcock, can't put it together to be successful, even though they do have a lot of those weapons there, but it's questionable on how they can be. So I would go with Minnesota right now.
And finally, this is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. So love to hear your thoughts, another perspective. What are your thoughts on the Golden Knights, about 6 weeks into the season?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think it's most people in the hockey world just hate seeing what has had to happen in terms of the goaltender situation there, in terms of how Vegas started off so, so great, and then the goaltender curse hit. On the other hand of that, it's getting goaltenders a lot of experience for the future in that organization, which is very, very good to have the junior goalie get called up and have him make a start and to have that depth. And now they're finally getting healthy. But the biggest thing with Vegas is seeing the fan support that has come out there and seeing how competitive the team has been and how they're not getting trampled on like so many other expansion teams have. They have an extremely competitive team there. And you can see just in the standings. I mean, even though they've had some rough games, they're still second in the Pacific. That's a really, really good sign there. Plus, their offense is clicking. And in past expansion teams, it was always hard to get an offense to produce because you're always picking from the bottom of the litter. And now you have David Perron and James Neal that are doing extremely well in terms of getting points for that team. And long road trip will sometimes hurt you, but I like seeing Vegas successful. I like seeing the fans show up. I like seeing a lot of these players that some teams said, we just can't protect you, so you're going to have a fresh start with an expansion team. I like seeing a lot of those players step up knowing they have something to prove because they apparently weren't quote-unquote good enough for another team. So I like seeing Vegas be successful. I like seeing the fan support around it. I can't wait to hopefully get there soon for a game to take it in because I hear so many good things about it. And, I mean, heck, I'm playing NHL 18. I actually just played Vegas as the Predators, and it took me to overtime shootout. Even the video game, they're extremely competitive. So I really like seeing a competitive expansion team. I think the way they did it, even though some fans will not agree with that, I think they did it right to give Vegas a head start so they can be successful. You want a team like that to be successful. You don't want them to fail. You don't want hockey to fail. It's about growing the sport, and they're doing a great job of introducing so many new fans to the game and growing the sport, because won't it be awesome when you hear more and more times of, hey, this kid grew up playing hockey in Vegas and now he's getting drafted in the NHL. I love stories like that when you hear about expansion teams being the part of the reason why a kid is getting drafted in the NHL. So that's just a future success story in the next generation that's going to happen. It's going to happen there. And so I love seeing that kind of storyline.
Yeah, you don't have to look any farther than Austin Matthews, right? The reason he chose hockey was because he saw the Arizona Coyotes play. So, you know, but for the Coyotes in Arizona, Austin Matthews, you know, he could have been a baseball player or a football player. He could have went any direction he wanted to, as freak athletically as that kid is. But no, he went to the hockey game, fell in love with the game in Arizona, and yeah, the rest is history with that kid. We already have one guy in the National Hockey League, Jason Zucker, who's a Las Vegas kid. And the way this team, and we spoke a little bit last time you were on the show about how Nashville went out into the community to solidify a young fan base when they got their expansion team there. And one thing I'll say about Vegas is they've you know, the day after the expansion draft, they had Fleury, England, Neil, and a couple of the other guys go to four or five different schools, handing out sticks and pucks, holding little impromptu hockey camps with a bunch of the kids here in town. Mm-hmm. They bought up the Las Vegas Storm, our I think double A junior team that we have here, bought them up, rebranded them the Junior Knights, threw all the gear and bells and whistles at them. So that aspect of, you know, how's it going to be in the community, it obviously is forefront in their mind. From an organizational standpoint is, and then, you know, what we saw after 1 October here in Las Vegas with the players getting out of the community and stopping by the first responders, mm-hmm. the hospitals, giving their own blood and the blood drives and just embracing the community. Really fantastic work by the Golden Knights. I'll say their community involvement. It's to build a fan base, but it's also to build community, I think. And I think they've done a fantastic job with that out of the gate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally agree with that. And I think a lot of folks learn from Nashville and what they did, like you said, but you have to be out in the community and you have to have the right people in an organization to be willing to go out into the community, because we've seen other franchises not do that and they haven't been near as successful. So being in the community, having the community support, growing that, it'll go a long way for 10, 20, 30 years from now, not just right in the first 5 years.
Well, Justin, it's great to have you on. Again, everyone follow Justin on Twitter at Justin B. Bradford. Again, follow his stuff, co-host at the Penalty Box Radio, as well as a writer. Check out his book, author of Making of Smashville. And Justin, we'd love to have you back on and during the second half of the year, and maybe as we're getting ready for the playoffs, take a look of where the Preds are at and where the Western Conference is at.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. Thank you, sir.
So we're going to wrap up the show, but I asked Mark for 60 seconds here. Quick hits just to promote. Everyone should be checking out. We're with, Grandstand Sports Network. That's grandstandsportsnetwork.com. Our show is on there, as well as a number of other hockey shows and football shows. I know there's a Bruins podcast. There's a Buffalo Sabres podcast. So the site is off to a really good start. Saw a report about it. This is from Chad Dominguez, one of our fearless leaders over there. And also check out our show over at Russ Cohen's SoundCloud page as well. Russ has a number of good shows. That channel, we're really fortunate to be part of both of those channels. We got three shows left for 2017. Next week, as I mentioned before, we'll have Chris Wassel on to talk about the Devils. Following week, we'll have Mr. Lyle Richardson. You know him. He's the fearless leader over at Spectres Hockey. So we'll talk a lot of trade rumors with him. That should be a lot of fun. And then our last show for 2017, December 9th, will just be me and Mark, and we'll kind of do a recap of, we'll talk about a review of each division, where the Knights are at, and break down each division as well. And in terms of tomorrow night, if you're not doing anything, 6 p.m. East Coast time, I'm going to give out, I usually don't do this, but there's a special reason for it, NHL on the Ice podcast. You can find us at NHL on _the_ice. Brian Yates loves underscores. 6 p.m. Eastern, Mark Warner here is going to be one of our special guests. He'll be on at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and he will
be talking
Vegas Golden. Yeah, talking Vegas Golden Knights as well as some other Pacific Division. I'll probably hit you up on some Kings questions. Hopefully you'll be coming off a win, sir. So,
either way. Well, yeah.
No, well, I mean tonight.
It's before tomorrow night's game, so.
Right. So, for Kings, for your sake, put you in a kind of a good mood. So, all right. You have any last? Any last thoughts, sir?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. Good talking with Justin as always. His take on the tourist deal. I told you last week I was hoping that would be the last time that we had to talk about that trade, and then you bring Justin in, so of course we have to ask.
You brought it up. I don't from a predator's standpoint. I want that on the record.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it's funny, we're calling it the Kyle Tourist deal, like I, you know, not the Matt Duchene trade. So at least I got away from that part of it.
Yes.
Okay, buddy. Well, that's going to do it for this week. We appreciate everybody. I wanted Chris to put in the show notes today to remember Behind US and Canada, our number one audience outside of North America is Sweden still, and continuing to grow in their listenership numbers over there. Can't wait for Branderstrom to show up in the Vegas Golden Knights so we can touch on another Swedish kid playing for the Vegas Golden Knights. So we appreciate you guys over there. Keep listening, keep emailing the show. We enjoy hearing from you and having you as listeners to the show. So we appreciate that a great deal. But that's going to do it for this week. We got to run. So for Chris, I'm Mark, and we're gone.
You know, many find it hard to believe I own a sleigh that can fly. But you know what I find hard to believe? The unbelievable offers going on at the Winter Event.
The Mercedes-Benz Winter Event is back with incredible offers on the sporty CLA, the thrilling C-Class, the versatile GLA, the safe and secure GLE, the innovative GLC, and of course, the unequaled E-Class. But hurry, because these sleighs are going fast. Visit mbusa.com/winter-event. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing.